If you don't like what we tell you to believe in, we'll kill you.
Is tedious on the right stuff.biz.
I came here to address deep concerns and drink coffee, and I'm all out of coffee. Maybe I'm not. I just spilled coffee on my mixer.
We got to talk about the elephant in the room.
Well, here's what I've always said.
What, CM Punk's return to WWE?
We should talk about Cody Rhodes again. That's.
Oh, everybody likes Cody Rhodes.
Delve into his marriage problems.
But marriage problems, he married a nigger.
You know what I've always said?
What?
Concern addressing is easy to start, but hard to finish. Much like nihilism. But,
I can finish. I can finish it. I think I can finish concern addressing.
Yeah. But many times people with concerns.
Well,
like, I'm just, I don't want to.
You stepped all over my concerns. I just discovered this morning that my youngest son is a pyromaniac.
He's got
the pyromaniac gene. He took one of my paintbrushes and he stuck it in the heater and burned the tip of the paintbrush off.
And that was probably really fascinating to him. Not so much to the
audience. And then I gave him a pyromaniac test. I took a lighter and lit it in front of him, and he was laughing and excited.
You mean you just you created a pyromaniac?
Now I have deep concerns.
Great.
Great. So he's going to burn my house down.
All right.
Might be an improvement. No.
Just make sure you stay on the call and finish the show if that happens.
I will. Yeah. I'm a good employee.
Right. So
loyal.
So
we're going to talk about why I have one less product to sell on Tuesdays.
Mm-hmm. No, we're going to have a show on Tuesday nights.
I know. I'm just kidding.
I'm always going to be doing that stream. Listen, I'll just say this. Look, I get that. It was very shocking to people and it blindsided them what happened with Stryker.
Yeah.
They weren't expecting it. They didn't see it coming. I can totally understand that. But from our perspective, this was not a shock. And I understand that also people are highly curious about it. And us saying we had a disagreement, parted ways. Everyone's like, I need to know more. It's completely understandable. And we tried initially doing it that way because, try to do things in amicable or professional manner of how you break things up or whatever. But part of that was...
But that only works if you got professionals to deal with.
Well, it only works when both sides do it. And so we had I was sort of trying to maintain the thing that we had agreed on after it had kind of already been broken, but that's what it is. So we had spoken with Stryker. He resigned, and we were negotiating with him for the last week or so on how we were going to handle that. He resigned Sunday last, so a week ago.
I didn't even realize it was that long ago.
Yeah, that was when he decided he was going to resign, and we put a pin in it, and we're like, all right, we'll figure out how we'll do this, what the terms of that are going to be. And we did Strike and Mike Tuesday, and it was all right. But, it was the same. Strike and Mike, that had been basically an autopilot for 2 years where we would go on, do the show, and really wouldn't talk in between.
Now, what led up to the resignation?
Well, a lot of different things. But to put it, I'll put it this way. I'm going to agree with one thing that Stryker said in his resignation. And that was that he said his vision for the party. And this, the problem is,
I know,
that when you talk about what his vision is, it's just only his vision.
Mm.
And the issue is when you take a guy like him, very strong-willed, very opinionated, very forceful, and frankly, not in really any way tolerant of sort of, not just like disagreement, but even sort of any sort of competing space, it becomes sort of like, anything that is not that he's controlling, he starts to see as like an enemy. And when you build an apparatus like in the National Justice Party, when we brought Tony on as our permanent chief of staff to build an organization, to create a staff, to create people who are going to be in charge of executing certain mundane tasks, or people who are going to be running, making flyers, setting up events, like people who are going to be doing these basic organizational things. And then you go to Stryker and you say, like, well, okay, we're having an event on such and such a date, at such and such a time. His reaction, instead of being like, thank you guys for setting things up, organizing things while doing your job, basically making an organization run smoothly so that we, the people that are the spokespeople, the people who are out in front of it, have a support group. So right. When I'm going to go make a speech, big speech in a location, I am highly grateful that there is a group of people behind me.
Yeah.
To set things up, to have the venue ready, to have the podium ready, to have the sound system in place. Stryker's reaction to that was, this is something I'm not in control of, therefore it's plotting against me. Mm-hmm. So we would have people that would come to him and say, hey, we're having the event here. This is just an example, okay? We're having the event here. You're going to be speaking, so we need you to have be here at this time and get set up and all this stuff. And he'd be like, I never agreed to this. You know, I never agreed to that. You guys are planning this without my input. And like, I'm sick of not having any power in this group. So that was sort of, and take that and repeat it like infinitely.
Right.
And I know that this is
the reason I'm not really chiming. The reason I'm not chiming in is I don't have this experience with him. Like, he's never really done this shit to me. So I don't like.
Well, because from your perspective as
I'm not in the party
co-host
with him, so,
and manager of the site, and just being sort of a party guy that comes to the events when you can. All you had to worry about was him doing a podcast.
I mean, I've heard stories. Like, you're not just making this. Like, I've heard stories about. I've heard stories about him being like being abusive to people.
This is sort of the point. So it would be that there would be somebody that would come up from the staff organization and say something to him. And they were doing their job. They were, as they had been instructed, that their job is to set up an event or, you know, do a campaign or something, whatever it might be. And if he felt, and it would be off and on. It wouldn't always be all the time.
Right.
But sometimes it would be like, you know, he was like, I don't have control of this. And what happened is that sometimes with people, like, you know, the way his mind works, it would be, okay, so he's very good at analyzing and deconstructing power structures.
Yeah.
But he doesn't really know where to stop doing that. So he started to see the actual organization, the increasingly well-run organization, and therefore ability to execute tasks of the NJP staff. And the NJP supporter groups, he started to see they're actually becoming something more than what most white nationalist groups have become, which is just a bunch of people talking shit online or in a newsletter, if you go back to the 80s or whatever it might be. He started to see this as a suffocating curtailment of his personal freedom and his personal ability to operate. And then one of the things that would happen is he would say stuff. Sometimes people wouldn't agree with it. And then they would say, I don't want to be represented by what you're saying, or I don't necessarily agree with those sort of things.
I've been on those ones. Okay.
And so then when we would try and talk to him about it, his answer would be, well, all those people that think that are undermining me, they're suffocating me, and they should be kicked out. And so we would have to explain.
I remember he would also say in a situation like that, well, I can say whatever I want. I don't represent anything. It's like,
yes, that would then be the retort where he would say, like, each other. If you don't like what I'm saying, then, and I get, like, look, there are times when somebody doesn't like what they're saying, what I'm saying or you're saying, and they're wrong. Like, they're actually full of shit and they're just whining. Fine. But even so, like, just being abusive towards that, just ignore it, right? Yeah. But there are sometimes when people are saying something and legitimately other people are like, hey, hold on. And the thing is, it's like, when you work in a group, and a podcast network is different because
podcasting is very different than running a political organization.
It's lower stakes. It's easier. And if someone says something on a podcast you disagree with, you just don't listen, or it's not a big deal, and someone can say a different thing on another podcast later. Although the other thing is that this network, we have increasingly solidified the points, the ideas, and the things that we're putting out, right?
Yeah.
And so – but with the NJP, again, the issue isn't like people were trying to constantly like control what he was saying. It's that we had to have an idea that we all represent each other. We're all on the same team. And so when
Usually he was,
but in those cases that he wasn't, he never accepted the idea of being on a team with other people. And the only way he would be capable of being on a team with other people would be to control them completely. So, for example, any project he was given or any, shall we say, responsibilities he was given, it became something where he would come in and say, I need party resources. And I need a staff that will follow my instructions with no questions. And I need nobody else to come in and interfere or oversee what I'm doing. And then I would have to tell him that's unreasonable. Like that can't be how it operates, particularly given that you're not actually the leader. Mm-hmm. And then he would say, well, then there's no point in me doing anything. And I'm going to throw out my arms and quit. And we would continually say to him, no, Stryker, what you're good at is podcasting. You're good at writing. We would like you to do those
research.
We were willing to pay you to do those things, researching, writing articles, finding out stuff about the FBI, finding out stuff about like Jewish fentanyl importers,
yep.
You know, all that kind of stuff. Very, very skilled and good at those kinds of things. And this is what he was valued for. And we continually told him that this is what you're valued for. This is what you're good at. What you're not good at is the interpersonal functioning of an apparatus, like taking care of a staff, planning things, coming up with an actual workable plan to bring off an event or something like this. Right. And yet he found it intolerable that he couldn't control the whole thing at his whim whenever he wanted to. And there was times when he was perfectly willing to be hands off. But when he got it into his head that now I want to be in control, he would become enraged when people would tell him, this isn't your purview. This isn't your job. The event staff plans the events. The propaganda staff does flyering or whatever it might be. And so this is what, where this is why he was saying things like this. This isn't living up to my vision of things, because his vision of things is that he sort of arbitrarily would get to control any part of the thing whenever he wanted to, and that nobody should ever question that, and that this was a reasonable way to be. Mm. And eventually we had this out with him so many times it became untenable.
This departure wasn't something that just happened at the drop of a hat, right?
No.
Because
frankly, you know, one thing I'll say, people then might say, well, hey, like, why did you do the NJP? So we did the NJP because we felt we needed actually to have something out there.
Remember the summer of 2020?
Vehicle.
Remember the summer of 2020? Do you remember the summer of 2020?
Yes.
Anybody asking that question? I mean, you had the president, the orange-based, neo-Nazi, hiding in the bomb shelter in the White House while the country burned down, and then he came out to do like a photo op. He walked across the street with and held a Bible up for some reason, a serial adulterer, and then went back into hiding while then the city continued to burn again. The country began to burn. I mean, he lifted not a finger, because we're in the Christmas season now, to like stop it. Everybody was on that page of like, you know, the best people could muster up was like, actually, at the time, could you even say snarky things on Twitter? I don't remember what summer 2020 was like on Twitter because I don't think I had any more.
Well, they were also at that time launching the project of like, be mad about COVID instead of about BLM. And we even on our show made fun of these conservatives who were talking about
I remember they did like
I want health freedom with like Burning City behind them.
I remember they did like an operational pause on COVID to allow the blacks to riot without masks on.
That was like one of the legit narratives that the COVID people had. And I don't think they exploited that to good enough effect. But the thing there is that then once you move from doing podcasts with people, which you can have all kinds of cantankerous, hard, difficult people if all they have to do is chime in and do a podcast once a week.
So as far as these interpersonal conflicts, there were attempts to try to have interventions and discussions to kind of mitigate the problem, right?
You see how gray my hair is now? I mean, look, yes, we for very long tried to not do this. And in fact, one of the things Stryker would do is when things weren't going his way internally, he would threaten to quit. And we would tell him, like, no, that's not necessary.
Using your resignation.
Not take these drastic steps.
Using your resignation as a shit test.
You
can only do that so many fucking times. Like I said, I haven't experienced that. But hearing about this in like secondhand, it frustrates me to no end, because it's like The resignation ultimatum. You can do that like once in the real world. I don't know. I don't mean to.
Well, look, the point
I'm just
being
venting.
That this
I'm just venting my frustration.
Well, let's not vent here because
it seems that good faith efforts were made to resolve the situation.
Oh, 100% for over a year. For over a year, and the situation. Look, I don't want anyone to think that anybody is not like deeply regretful of this having to happen because it is. But you know, and I understand when you see a thing saying we had like disagreements that couldn't be resolved, you're going to be like, well, that just sounds like a blow off or whatever. And the reason you say that is because, you know, the hope is, yes, like, let's use some of this sort of really anodyne bureaucratic language. Let's talk in this way. And people will kind of just get that there was some really unpleasant shit that nobody wants to dig through again. But
right,
that's never really going
to
work.
You've exhausted your options when you get to that particular juncture.
Right.
I
know that there's some people who are in the audience who probably saw that and were like, oh, man, I can only imagine the shit shows that were going on behind the scenes. I actually got several people coming to me yesterday saying this. And there are other people for whom they see something like that. Like, I have to know more of what's going on. And, you know, the other thing is then if I maintain just doing that and then the other party starts going out and saying things, then he's now controlling how this is framed. And obviously he's going to be angry and he's going to want to control that frame in a certain way. And I don't want to be in some kind of pissing match like that with anybody.
Well,
so
no,
I'm
this
telling
is,
you guys
this is
now,
specifically for talking to our audience that enjoy and want to continue to enjoy the chat.
And I have no plans on making this an online feud or a flame war with Stryker or going back and forth with him on Telegram or any of that. I legitimately hope that he goes off and does a project that will make him happy, that he can completely control on his own, maybe a writing project or something like that, and that is fulfilling for him.
Yep.
But the way his personality is, his need to be in control of things, his frankly, it's not even abrasive rudeness. That's a euphemism for what it is, the way he would get with people. So this became...
I just want to throw in there, I'm a little bit miffed with all this. It's like, okay, you can't work with the NJP. Why can't you make the podcast? That's kind of a thing. It's like you can't even do that either. It's like
we have such an easy job here. It's so easy. All you have to do is log on, turn on your camera, turn on your microphone, and record a show.
No. This job is very difficult, Alex. It takes a lot of work. We're very good at what we do. We make it look easy. That's the trick. But no, I just mean
from my perspective, doing the podcast is my favorite part of everything that I do.
Right.
Because I like to. You know, that's why we even started doing this, because I look at shit that's out
there.
But
it just tells you, like,
there's
a take my ball and go home, like, aspect to what he did, where it includes, like, this other thing that he can't do a podcast. You know, it sucks. And that's what people, that's what I was looking around on our website. That's what they're really mad about. I was like, okay, we're not going to have these takes of his anymore. And I'm just like, what are you going to do?
I mean, yeah, and I understand that. And like I said, I'm actually... I'm not happy about it.
It just feels like he had the option to just get along and produce a show.
Many times.
Like, this was always on the table.
So, well, look, I'm just saying, like, again, this is going to be, I don't want this to be interpreted as like some flaming of this guy, but people genuinely don't understand how what this podcast that had been going on for 5 years and was very popular could just out of the blue do this. Well, on some level, that's because, and people are like, oh, it's all hidden behind the scenes. Well, like, yeah, like,
well, of course
you don't always know what goes on at the inside of any organization, right? And then, but things are always going on. People are always being people and doing things and having these disagreements or whatever. And, you know, with an individual like him, it can never be just a disagreement. It always had to be a power play. It always had to be a thing. And so,
well,
in the end, it was that essentially his attitude is, I get to do whatever I want. Fuck the rest of you. If you're not listening, you're like a subversive.
When you see somebody who's been on a show and been in a scene for years and years and years, and they make a departure, it's not like it just happened overnight. It's not like it was a split second decision. There's always a chain of things that led up to it. It's not.
And sometimes people can do it in the right way and they can like part friendly and such. And so my point is that this is sort of explaining the comment that he made about how like his vision of the NJP wasn't being fulfilled. I would say politically and ideologically, that's really not true. Because there's not going to be any change in the political or ideological tone of any of
that. That's corporatist language once again. Where like I'm not saying what I mean. I'm using like an anodized.
Right. I mean, I'm sure if he were to go out and say what he really wants to say, he now probably will. It is that he will accuse us of undermining him, attacking him.
No,
I want him to shut him out.
I want him to get back at what he's really great at. I don't want to undermine that at all. But we have to like
that's what we wanted.
But we have to like we have a thing we're doing here too, and this hurt it, and we don't want it to be that way. So
the thing is, he manages to take people that he works with, and. Nah, we've said it already. Like, whatever.
Have you read Dune, though?
It is what it is. We've already been doing it for too long.
What would Terry Goodkind write about this?
Yeah, Terry Goodkind would probably have a character, have something to say to us about these kinds of situations, as would Frank Herbert.
Oh, man.
But again, I don't want to spiral on this, and I didn't even really want to say these things, but I do feel like I can't allow the narrative out there that like there's something deeply wrong with NJP or the NJP is going in some kind of other ideological direction or that there was some thing motivating us to go in another ideological directions. Like when I said in the corporate speak thing that there were personal disagreements
it was
that
literally
started
personal.
To become impossible. That is literally true. And trying
well,
to
one of the
people,
bitter ironies of having an organization that's pretty professional and manages people well is you kind of keep that stuff tamped down and it's undercover until the very end when it blows up.
Yeah.
Right. Well, this is the other thing about like structure, the way organizations are structured in a capitalist society is that they are usually structured in such a way where, yeah, you don't know what the hell is going on in the upper levels. And, you know, if they want you gone, they just say bye. And understandably, people feel like this is an alienating and weird way to operate. But on some level, you know, I can see how such an organizational structure would have arisen. But again, you know, I don't really need to go into any more detail about any of this. My only point here is that, like, this is not because like of some political or ideological drift away from the core principles that we're doing. This was basically the internal workings of our group that we have built, and we put a lot of our lives and effort, money, resources, God knows how many hours of stress and you know, pain and just uncertainty, precariousness, everything we've done to maintain this network and then ultimately to do the NJP to try and do something out in the wider world as a way to organize white people to actually fight the enemy. Actually fight the enemy or at least hold out against the enemy. And that enemy is the Jewish Zionist Empire that we are a part of. And I believe Stryker, when he says he does not want to stop fighting the enemy, I do believe fully in his heart he wants nothing more than to overthrow our enemy. I believe that completely. But the personality things were such that our group and the way it's operating could not continue with the constant kinds of disruptions that he was causing. And
that was going to be my last question.
That's basically it. And I know this is upsetting and distressing to people. They love Stryker. They love his output. They love the podcast. And I understand all that, and it's terrible. I'm sorry, but this is where we are, and we're going to keep going. I'm going to still do a show Tuesday for those of you that watch your show on Tuesday. You're going to have your product on Tuesday, probably for the rest. I'm going to have.
That sounds so slimy when I say it, but I can't help but do the irony bit of like, just get excited for next product. Like, I'm sorry, someone already like missed.
Yeah, we're
going to
have
meeting.
Next product, but again, like it's going to be and we'll talk about Dune. we'll talk about Whipping Star and we'll talk about Hellstrom's Hives.
I'm gonna read that again.
And we'll talk about all of that stuff. But we'll also talk about Hezbollah and things like that. But you know, so I'm gonna have the show and I'm gonna be doing it, probably different guests and probably solidify permanent co-host by January.
Have you ever found yourself late starting a show due to managing particular interpersonal problems with Eric Stryker? Has that ever happened?
That's happened with everyone.
Yeah.
Actually, the,
that kind of thing is like, whatever, we can do that. Like, the funniest, again, it's also not like there's not interpersonal problems with other people too.
There have been, but usually it doesn't turn into a pattern of behavior that goes on year after year after year until eventually you get it.
What needs to happen with people that are in these kind of organizations is that, like, you have to actually be able to communicate and trust people and not assume that because someone has a different idea or someone's carrying out even just their assigned tasks that they are like an enemy or plotting against you or something like that. You know, it's like, no. When you have people whose job is to plan an event or to edit articles on a website, they're not in like a plot against you. They're your support staff. And frankly, we're at the point where I am more grateful than anything for the support staff, the people that work to put together meetings and venues where I go and I speak to people and I have hundreds of people there to listen. And that to me is like one of the most amazing things about this whole project is that this Tony has put together people that will do that. They can do that. And like, I'm told, hey, listen, we got a venue, we got food, we got drinks, we got vendors, we got tables, chairs, we got banners, we got all of it set up. You, Mike, you show up, you give the keynote address, hundreds of people are there cheering, and it's the best thing. I can never imagine starting to view this as something that is there to undermine me, control me, hamper me. It's there to support us. It's there to make us bigger and stronger.
Yeah, it's people doing their jobs. I mean, and I can understand to a small degree why people might occasionally be a little bit wrinkled. Like when I go to an NJP event and they put me through like a security pat down, I'm almost rolling my eyeballs. Like, I don't have weapons. I never carry weapons.
Did they reach up your kilt?
But they have to do it. That's part of their job. That's part of the professional thing that they're doing. So you just got to go along with it.
Please lift your kilt, sir.
I get wanded. I shouldn't reveal this. This is going to piss people off.
Oh no! Don't reveal.
I actually have been allowed to keep my phone in my pocket at NJP events.
So you can dox everyone.
That's unprofessional.
Man, I you know what? When we did Mania, I always made a point of like surrendering my phone too.
I'm going to personally check for his phone next time.
But then, like when I would show up at NJP events, they're like, "No, you can keep yours, Mike." And I'm like, "No, you can have it. I don't have to keep it. I'm not messaging anybody while we're in here, so who fucking cares? Like everyone I want to talk is already here."
So, all right.
So yeah, I mean, the NJP has been it's been a bit of an adventure. It's been a lot. It's been something where it's like, okay, we had a bunch of very strong personalities. We put them together and we built this thing, and things happen with that.
Well, I mean, it's also important, I think, to remember that these kinds of dramas and organizations, I mean, any volunteer organization looks like this, usually they're even worse. I've been involved in volunteer organizations for over 10 years at this point.
Well, I've always said this about problems. Our community, like, because a lot of times people in this community, white nationalist community and stuff, they assume that we are like uniquely filled with mentally ill people.
No, I was just going to say, like, no, it's,
and I'm
it's,
like, I don't think that's true.
It's
at all,
America.
Man.
It's like, it's just
America's like there are people walking around in America that have all kinds of weird fucked up complexes and shit going on, but they're not doing anything high stakes.
It's like, what kind of gaslit are you? You know?
Well, I mean, it's a lot of people have not had the experience of being in a committee, being in a meeting, and there's always that one guy, there's always that conflict entrepreneur who every time you try to have a meeting, he's going to create a problem. Everybody else dislikes him. Most people just kind of keep it under their hat, but there's always that guy.
Yeah. And again,
always
it's like
there.
The point here is not to like disparage. It's really to kind of explain to people why a thing that that was like one of their favorite shows and something that they thought was very important.
Well,
to them, why this has gone away.
Show.
And
that's
I can't just leave these people without a satisfactory explanation. Now I'm sure the Striker is going to have his own explanation of this. And if you want to listen to that, go for it. But this is from my perspective and the perspective of the people in the NJP, where we are, and this is why we ultimately accepted his resignation about now 8 days ago, so eight or 9 days ago. And we did try to do Strike and Mike again after he had resigned, and we did the show, and then that also was going to be a problem because if NJP It's one of my projects, and I'm, you know, we're not always going to be talking about boosting NJP on these shows, but we are going to be talking about it. Now, what kind of position does that put him in if he doesn't really want to do that anymore? So that just became untenable. So there it is. Now we can actually talk about Dune.
I had a different piece of writing in front of you, but we can talk about Dune if you want. I have Barry Weiss content.
Oh, okay. Oh,
but I don't know. I almost feel like pausing because this is so exhausting. But
we can pause. We can take a break and just do 2 hours after this if you want.
Oh,
it is exhausting.
Awful.
And look, I got it. Everyone, look, people, I don't know how well people know me or what kind of parasocial relationship you have. But I hate this kind of stuff.
Who doesn't?
I hate it. I want to do the protests, the activism, the speeches. I want to do the NJP. I want to do the shows. I want to put the content out. I want to put the ideas out. I want to get people on board with what we're doing. And it can't only be for my own like personal sense of control and power over a situation. It has to be, everyone has to sacrifice part of their own ego to the larger thing. I know how that sounds very grandiose, right? But which is another thing I really hate, but it's true. It's true that we all have to be willing to basically say, okay, this is a collective operation, a collective organization. And I am now willing to subsume my own personal ambitions and desires to that. And there are times when I have a thing where I see people in the thing that are like not happy with what I've done or not happy with something I've said, and they come at me, and my instinct is like, hey, shut the fuck up. I have that instinct, right? Everybody, I know Jesse has that instinct.
My instinct is usually like, what are you trying to get me to say?
But you can't, you know, like you have to also then look at it and be like, okay, that's also a person. That person also has ideas and thoughts about how things should be. And don't get me wrong, there are bad actors. Mm. There are. And you know, I've become pretty adept at sniffing them out and seeing them for what they are. And, like, you know, deeply concerned of people of, like, addressing demanders, like, you know, concern addressing enjoyers and things like that. You know, like, that's out there. And so everyone has that impulse, but it's like, you know, we also have to understand in a group, like, yeah, there is a larger goal, and ultimately you have to sit back. I'm willing to say, hey, what I want to do here will actually really fuck up the larger goal, and I have to just let that go or not get my way this time.
Right. I mean,
so
I don't know.
Even being the chairman, that has to happen. So
Eric Stryker was a popular podcaster. People liked content. It seems that every avenue was exhausted to try to prevent this outcome. It's not like anybody just wanted to take him out or something.
Every outcome to the effort. Point where people were getting angry at me.
For not, yes.
So, yes.
Literally bent over backwards to try to stop this from eventually happening, but it is what it is.
Yeah. But, yeah, if you want your hard politics show, you're going to still get it. So if you want a show where I don't get constantly interrupted,
as I do it to you, it's like a show where guys don't try to finish each other's sentences. That'll be the new twist.
I don't know if anybody could deal with a show like that out of this network, though. It's so off script.
No.
It's so off brand.
It's messed up my ability to have real life conversations. I'll tell you that.
Well, in real life conversations, I just talk over and interrupt people also. So
I know that's what I find myself doing. I hate it.
You have conversations that don't happen on the internet? Cringe.
Well, I tend to just dominate every conversation I'm in, and everyone just tends to stop talking and just start listening attentively to everything I say. And they're not feeling awkward or uncomfortable wanting me to shut up. No, they're deeply listening to all my points.
We wait for them to get tired and fall asleep, because it will happen. If you wait him out, he will fall asleep.
Oh, at parties, I always fall asleep. Yeah. So I get tired late at night. And eventually I'll be on the couch and I'll just be like, and people are like, is this guy drunk? You're like, no, he likes to sleep.
No, he's just tuckered out.
He's just narcoleptic.
Well, look, we do NJP events and you're on this massive, like, you know, you go and you see all these people, you give a speech, you have this big sort of adrenaline rush from all that activity. You go to an after party. Sit down on the couch, you just conk out. Oh, well. So, yeah. All right. Yeah, I know, I've been known to bend my elbow a bit, but it's never like I'm not ever passed out drunk. That doesn't happen. And that's not even sarcastic. Like, oh, legitimately, God. Does not happen.
You want to hear about bending elbows? I got two cords of firewood delivered yesterday. And I've been like...
Two cords?
Two. I had no choice.
How many... Do you have a rack big enough for that?
I stack them on pallets. And then I have a pieces of T111 I put on top of them. The question is...
I still have like half the cord I bought at the beginning of the summer in my garage.
It's split. But it's not nice stuff. Like I'm splitting it more.
You got a better deal than the way me and my brother used to. We used to drive a log truck over to somebody's place and then cut the logs on the back of the truck, just roll the stuff off in their yard. Well, enjoy splitting that.
Yeah, I sort of got caught off guard because I didn't think I was ever going to get the wood stove insert, and then suddenly they installed it like a week after Halloween. I was like, oh shit, I had wood, but I don't have wood for like the entire season, so I'm probably just going to be like. Burning this terrible, like, wet shit in about 2 months, but we're praying that doesn't happen.
Oh, it's green and wet?
Well, I mean, I don't know. It just looks like wood to
when
me.
When I first got my wood delivered at the beginning of this summer, when we would go out and have fires, it would just take forever to catch because it was they didn't dry it or anything. It was just like, here, cut it. Here's extra house now.
You want to get some white pine. You want to burn that. Lots of white pine. Put that in your indoor.
Everyone out there, do not burn white pine in your fucking fireplace. Right. Holy shit. I don't know what that does. Right. I don't know what happens to you. I just know that you don't do that. What happens?
You should burn like pressure treated wood.
Jesus.
I'll tell you what happens.
It burns a long time. It lasts a long time.
See, my wife is from Florida, and I had to explain to her what a flue fire is.
Oh.
It's a flue fire.
That's when a redneck puts fucking pine in his fucking fireplace. Sorry to use the R word. It's our word.
That's when the fire department has to get on top of your roof and try to put the damn thing out.
Oh, I have the big stick things. You break them and throw them in. It's supposed to suck all the oxygen out of your chimney in 20 seconds. So I'll be okay.
I forgot what those are called. I'm not sure. Firefighters have a version of that.
I'm not sure.
Well, I don't burn fires indoors. It's all outdoors for me, so I really have very fewer risks with fires at my place. But that also means we can't have them in the winter. It's actually legitimately too cold.
Right. It's too cold to have a fire.
Although we did when I first moved into this house and I had... My birthday party that first year, we had a nice big fire out back.
Yeah, I was going to say, though, like, February. It's wintertime. Don't light a fire. We're just going to go out and sit in the hot tub. That's what you do in the winter.
There you go.
And then and then people getting in and out create a nice, like, sheet of ice from the hot water hitting the patio.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah. And then everybody's at risk of just eating it. Like, and when you're cold, when it's cold out and you, like, slam, like, your elbow or your finger on something hard, that's, like, it's even more painful when it's cold. When you slip and smack your ass, your tailbone on a rock.
The thing with the flue fires.
It's even worse when it's freezing cold out.
Tell me about the flue fires. It's just the
fire departments come out. They put out the flue fire, and they usually try to kind of clean the chimney when they do it because they know the homeowner is not going to follow through and get a professional company.
So you get a free chimney cleaning?
Clean
that's
chimney.
Awesome. Free chimney cleaning. Yeah. That's great. All right.
Pretty much.
It's not their job, but they got to do it because otherwise they'll just be running more flue fires.
Crazy. Well, you want to talk about Barry Weiss? Might as well just press forward.
Yeah, no, we're just going to press forward. I mean, at this point, I don't really want to come back to this topic again. No, it's unpleasant. But
yeah,
flue
fires.
I don't really know what
pleasant.
Hasn't. If
the
you
problem
have
the
more
flue
questions,
fires, you can crack
this.
Your chimney, and then you got all kinds of problems.
If you have more questions about flue fires, but about this other thing, if you have more after this, like now, I think legitimately I can say you're going to have to live with the curiosity because I don't really see what it would be helpful to say more at this point.
Well, I don't think there's like any value to just keep like basically amounting to what just becomes gossip, but you had to.
Yeah. And I'm not, you know, I don't want to put specifics because I don't want to be accused of gossiping, but the fact is that, you know, If Stryker is going to put out his side of things and say that, you know, my vision wasn't achieved, like, you know, I have the right to say, well, here's my side of things. And so that's where that's all. And this is
where
it's
I would
it's
say
going
it doesn't even
end.
Come into like his. I don't care about his side of things. I'm being asked by people.
Yes.
That pay out and that I care about, that care about us. Like I can totally answer those questions, or you can, because you're in the better position too. Right. I don't really.
Right, and I don't, you know, there's going to be people who will be like, who's he doing? And I'm like, no, that doesn't really matter. Like, just this, yeah, so.
Anyway.
So, yeah.
The Free Press for Free People.
Is this the Detroit Free Press?
Oh, I thought this was Barry Weiss.
Oh, is it? All right, because I know that the Detroit.
It's Ilya Shapiro.
Newspaper.
Oh, hold on, let me dig back into my email. Why was Barry Weiss's name invoked in this article? I thought I was reading a Barry Weiss article, and now I'm reading some just like off-brand Jewish Yenta bullshit. I don't know if I want to read off-brand Jewish bullshit. I like the fucking name brand shit. Is it hidden in a fuck? It's hidden in a goddamn thread about somebody's. It's hidden in a thread about somebody's fucking order. That sucks. Son of a bitch. Oh, there it is. Okay. Barry Weiss is one-stop shopping for Zog Histrionics. Here's a useful rundown of their anti-speech tactics. Comments on the Substack are retarded.
What? I'm sorry. What exactly?
I don't know why you invoked Barry Weiss. Maybe is this an article about Barry Weiss? Whatever. Even anti-Semites have the right to free speech, as Nadine Strossen and Pamela Peresky correctly wrote in the Free Press. Since the Hamas massacre of October 7th, they've been taking full advantage of that right, especially on college campuses. pro-Palestinian groups have harassed and even assaulted Jewish students. Okay, source, I made it up. Source, I'm highly neurotic. Protesters have interrupted courses and taken over buildings. Ivy League professors have called Hamas' attack exhilarating and awesome. Well,
I mean, that was my position.
What would you call, like, paragliding into a rave and just, like...
That's, like, fucking exhilarating.
It's probably kind of awesome. Students have torn down posters of
awesome
missing Israeli children.
Mark's song was... Awesome Way yeah, right. song was awesome last on Monday. That shit fucking... I've listened to that like four times since then. This is great. Anyway, press forward.
I'm just sick of hearing about the students have torn down posters of missing Israeli children. Was the college campus going to just like go on a search, a manhunt, and find the missing Israeli children? No, you're just putting that up there as part of your fucking propaganda to make people feel bad for you, the aggressors in the fucking conflict. Let's see. And they're pretending like that's like... So, I don't know. Others have chanted, even projected onto university buildings, slogans like "From the River to the Sea," "Globalize the Intifada," and "Glory to our martyrs." None of those things sound anti-Semitic. I don't like to play the game where you... That's not racist. It's not anti-Semitic. It's like they're just advocating for their side in your ethnic conflict. And you're the bad guys and they're the good guys. It must be nice to have this concept font that you can like point to every time you face adversity that like... Here's like an unfair disparagement of our people. Like no one else has it. It gets to call you an anti-Semite. I get to while I'm losing the argument, I get to disparage my interlocutor with that, as if that's a real. It's not an argument.
Well, the Jews never want to have the argument.
No, because they're always losing it. Like the war over Palestine is like you just lose. You lose the argument. It's like you can the only thing you can win. Is you can blow up more civilians and you can have a military victory that America allows you to keep.
It's really just America's military victory. And that's because you've basically subverted all of our institutions with money and blackmail and intimidation and bribery and abuse and all these things, right? Basically, how many people in America are worried that, the portfolio of them and the ladybugs is going to come out if you don't... by the way, I tried to get an AI program to draw an image of me of Lindsey Graham and Geert Wilders in a room with a bunch of ladybugs, like in a hotel room with a bunch of ladybugs flying around, and it wouldn't do that because the Microsoft one at least won't draw actual people. You can't put real names in there, so you have to just put like two politicians
with
in
bad
a room
hair.
With ladybugs.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway,
I'm trying to skip ahead here. This article is not very interesting, actually. Those who care deeply about free speech are asking themselves many questions at this urgent moment. What should we make of the calls to punish Hamas apologists on campus? After all, this is America, where you have the right to say even the vilest things.
It's not vile. Shut the fuck up with that. Stop. I hate that well poisoning. It's not vile.
Yes, many same students who on October 6th call for harsh punishment for microaggressions are now chanting for the elimination of the world's only Jewish state. But Americans are entitled to be hypocrites. Let's conflate two things that don't fucking belong together.
I mean, this shit just frustrates me because it's like
if the Jews only made like microaggressions, you might have a point there, but they make macroaggressions.
Well, it's also like
the Israeli state does actual. They don't do microaggressions.
But the other thing about this rhetoric is none of this is going to hit at all with like the kind of leftist people, right? This is them telling a story to people who they think are stupid.
Yeah.
You know, like when Jews write this kind of stuff, they're talking to people, they're legitimately talking to like white people who they consider to be like rubes and Marx.
This is like, you're not even that. It's like people that are already bought in on like, I'm pro-Jewish, I'm pro-Israel. It's just like, here's some like really shitty arguments as to why that's the right position and why we also can like restrain people's free speech who don't share your opinion and how that's okay. This is what these things, they do these all the time.
The people that are crying free speech so they can praise Hamas are enemies of free speech, like in other circumstances. And it's like, let's just be honest here that like free speech is frankly like free speech is a pain in the ass to people with power and a weapon in the hands of people without it. And that's why people with power want to suppress it in one way or another. And frankly, leftists on campus are in a weird position of being in power pretty much all the time, except on this one issue. And so they get confused by that. Like, how come we get everything we want until this one issue? And the only people that can actually explain that to you is us. And there's other people too. It's just people that understand the Jewish question, understand how Jews operate. The Jews don't operate based on a principle of free speech. Mm-hmm. They don't give a fuck about that. It's what's good for them, and that's it.
Yeah, they gave a fuck about that when they were in the process of like doing a cultural revolution, taking over this
country.
Yeah,
when they were undermining the institutions that existed and taking them over, they were crying free speech. Yeah. Yes.
That's what you see like old pictures in the 60s of like big hook nosed fucking kikes, like,
yeah, like Abby Hoffman and his fucking American flag jacket and bandana, you know, like, oh, I have freedom for everything. And it's like, yeah, that's because you want to tear everything down and then take it over.
So yeah, freedom for me to worm my way into what you got here and ruin it. So
yeah.
Those who care deeply about microaggressions. Don't these students have the same right to chant Hamas slogans as the neo-Nazis did to march in 1977 in Skokie, Illinois, a town that inhabited by many Holocaust survivors? Wait, are they not? Are there no more? Did the Holocaust survivors move out? They don't live there anymore.
I think they're dead.
Oh, so now they're not survivors.
I think they finally got. I think Hitler finally got them.
They finally succumbed to the Holocaust.
Yeah, they finally died of the Holocaust.
I'd put my free speech bona fides up against anyone. I'm also a lawyer, really, Mr. Shapiro, and sometime law professor who recognized that not all speech related questions can be resolved by invoking the words of the First Amendment. Let me guess which ones don't measure up.
Those are mainly the ones that I'm against.
Yeah,
as a Jew,
much of what we've witnessed on campuses over the past few weeks is not in fact speech but conduct. This sounds very Floridian.
Remember Randy Fine?
Yeah. Designed specifically
exactly
to harass, intimidate, and terrorize Jews. Other examples involve disruptive speech that can properly be regulated by school rules. Opposing or taking action against such behavior in no way violates the core constitutional principle that the government can't punish you for expressing your beliefs.
I don't like this government only restriction on free speech. Why should a powerful corporation also be allowed to do it? Why should a college also be allowed to do it?
Why should like a mob of Antifa be allowed to disrupt their speech?
If free speech, like legitimately, free speech means you get to say what you want, frankly, without consequences.
Okay, here we go.
That's actually what it means.
Now we're gonna get in some. Now we're gonna get some fucking beef right here. What are some examples of protest activities that are rightly considered conduct rather than speech? I'm like the ones that say like from the river to the sea.
The ones that are against Jews.
The ones that Jews don't like. In drawing a line between speech and conduct, some cases are easy. Beating someone up.
Well, unless you're Jewish, they're allowed to do that. Like Antifa and things like that were legitimately just allowed to beat people up. So that doesn't even pass the first test, but let's see where he goes.
Crowding around someone in a threatening manner, like a group of Harvard students. That's that's selectively enforced at best, including the editor of Harvard Law Review,
who you are,
did to an Israeli student who filmed their protest, is commonly known as a crime of menacing. Well, menacing is just, you know, if a Jew says you're menacing them, they could probably press charges or sue you. A pattern of actions designed to frighten and harass someone, like forcing Jewish students into the Cooper Union Library while pounding on the doors and windows, is stalking. Defacing someone's property by spray painting swastikas and slogans.
Well, that's one that's going to get a bunch of rabbis vandalism. In trouble. So, you know,
So is tearing down posters.
Well, that's, what if they're in a place where posters aren't allowed?
What if they're tearing? What if they were tearing down like my posters? Would you be up in arms? No.
Well, my thing is that like, if posters are allowed in this area, then they're also allowed to be torn down.
Masking at a protest. Hallmark of events sponsored by Students of Justice in Palestine, an organization, is illegal in many states, remnant of the battle against KKK intimidation. It's conduct, wearing a mask.
Okay. I actually have to step away for a second, so if you want to take a break now and come back, we'll finish it, because I do have to, there's something I got to do.
Okay.
It's not drama related, I literally have to go to the toilet.
Oh, same.
You are listening to the Daily Shower. As racist and sexist as they can be. We're gonna offend you, isn't it funny? La